over much quicker and get that done. So
yeah, I have started recording, just so you know. I've only just started recording. I like to give a little nods up onto that. But I thought we were on a pretty good point about the fact that, one, you guys are a small business, and two, you're trying to grow yourself and incorporate so much more, which is really very noticeable right now in a situation when, I don't know, I've been talking to lots of people who are small businesses, and they're kind of having this, the two-way thinking of, one, shit, what's going to happen this year with Brexit, everything like that, so much madness. But also, it's actually a really good opportunity for growth. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to put this in front of the camera because I have it on my phone, because I've literally been using it this morning. Because one of my New Year's resolutions, which I'm pretty sure I told you guys about, was recovery and making sure I recover better. And this, which if you're listening to this, you won't be able to see what I'm holding, but I wonder if you can hear it. Helps if I turn it on at the bottom, doesn't it? Maybe.
Yeah.
You can definitely hear something. It's nothing rude. I'll just say that it's a massage gun that I'm holding in my hands, which you guys kindly sent me at the end of last year, and has, to be honest, been saving my slightly fucked legs a large proportion of the time recently. So thank you. I always thought with these things that they look like, in my head, I just used to think they were little fists punching, and this particular end thing kind of looked fisty to me anyway. That's why I put it on. And I quite like this one because it's got a bit of squidge.
Yes.
So I remember like them appear, I don't know what it was with massage guns. They sort of appeared out of nowhere. And there was this one period of time where it was just like, bam, hundreds of massage guns.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my mate and we were just like, oh, it's just a little fish just going, dook, 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 dook. That's what it was. And I have one of my like conscious things that I'm working on this year. One is recovery, because I'm shit at it. Like 95% of cyclists, I would imagine. Yeah. And probably 99% of human beings, because we're all busy. And two, the other thing which I'm very consciously trying to work on much more this year is core strength and stability. And the reason for that is I was hit by a van like in 2019. Yeah, 2019. I got hit by a van quite badly just before doing a 24-hour race, and persisted, well, on the advice of medical people, they said, don't do the race. On the advice of myself, I did the race.
Yeah, good advice.
And whether or not that was a good idea, I'm going to leave to one side, because I've got to be honest, it wasn't a good idea. I got hit by a van, and it affected, the main thing it affected was my back.
Mm-hmm.
And physically, I didn't really have any cuts or bruises or scuffs or anything, but actually the bit I really struggled with was that I was having a lot of pain in my back, and I slipped a disc and did something else, tore some stuff, and I did this 24-hour race, and then basically consciously was like, it's going to hurt, just accept it. And then spend basically last winter trying to strengthen it. Got into a good position with that. Went to Morocco in February last year, rode a mountain bike race on a gravel bike. Stupid idea. Crashed really badly, jarred my back out again. And then subsequently spent a large portion of last year working on it again. And then started doing some silly ideas on a bike, fucked it a little bit more. So it's just this continual thing of like getting it better, breaking it more, and then basically having to get it better again and continue doing it. So that's why one of my big things this year was working on strength, especially in my back, to make sure that gets stronger. Because, you know, lots of cyclists actually do have quite a strong core. You may not necessarily think it, but you think of the positions that you're riding in, you have a strong core. And when I say strong core, I don't mean like, you know, ripped necessarily. It's just your base is really, really strong. And there's great ways to sort of look at that. I've been like, one of the things I've actually been doing that's really helped me is like Lululemon do really good videos. And I like them because they're really calm.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like some pumped up guy going like, yeah, fucking do this, go this way, go faster, harder. I'm just like, I just want calm, it's relaxing. And there's a guy, I can't think of the guy's name now, but there's a guy who does like a 45 minute and a 35 minute workout thing, which is fine. Like, let's do that once, one every day of the week. It's like, that's only 45 minutes out of the day or whatever it is. But he's really calm. And I really like that. So for reference, like, just search Lululemon 45 minute home workout or something like that on YouTube and it comes up. And I can't think of the guy's name, but he's good. Anyway, so that's why, big round story, why we're is recovery. And also I wanted to tick on the fact about you guys being a small business in a time when, you guys get to work with some pretty mega people still. It's a pretty nuts list, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. Just coming to the point you said of like massage guns just exploded and came out of the blue. We actually developed our first one, a really budget version, out of like a drill I dissembled and like welded a leg on and created and took it into rugby. And this was before you'd seen a massage gun and they weren't about. And that's where the seed was planted to create MyoMaster, because all of a sudden I was getting orders from lads I played with, like, I need one of these in my life. And as a result, I was in the kitchen dismantling tools, welding. Lottie's having a go at me because I should be building the kitchen, and instead I'm building these massagers. And yeah, basically it blew up a bit from there. Lottie, the brains of the business, came in and was like, surely if elite athletes want this, then there's got to be a bit of a marketplace for it. And it's just funny how quickly that changed from our idea and we're trying to get it developed to then a year later there's, as you say, hundreds on the market everywhere. And we were like, how has this happened? But that's how quickly it moves and how quickly recovery became part of people's thoughts. Because for a large period, like you said, 95% of people don't want to recover. You want to be out on your bike, you want to be cycling. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden what the Myo Pro does, which you've got there, is it's really quick, really effective and really easy. You haven't got to watch a program on how to use it. You haven't got to spend an hour of your day on the floor doing different stretches or rolling. It's actually very quick, very effective. So that was just an interesting thing on what you said about how all of a sudden it just came out of the blue. And that was highlighted there.
Yeah, I think, you know, what you said as well about this kind of mentality, I think a lot of people have, and I think your story will resonate with a lot of people, although I'm not sure everyone's as much of a risk taker as you've been. But, you know, you said it yourself, like, recovery is not the sexy bit. Like, it's not the bit that people get excited about doing. What they get excited about doing is training. And I think a lot of the narrative out there is like, must train harder, must cycle more to get better, must get more miles in the legs. And actually, you know, your post-ride recovery is as vital as your training. Like, that's the bottom line. We see so many cyclists who are training incredibly hard and they're just not taking the time to recover because, you know, they've got jobs, they've got families, they've got, you know, busy lifestyles. And recovery is a thing that kind of slips off the list, but, you know, we see if you're not doing it that ultimately your form gets worse. It's a bit of a vicious circle. You know, you think you're doing badly, so you want to put more miles in the leg, so you train harder.
Risk of injury increases. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Loads go on. And it's just the old saying of, obviously, when you're training, you're breaking down your muscle and it needs that time to recover. And what we all want to do with something we're passionate about, something we love, is want to do more of it. So yeah. You want to go out and cycle as much as you can to get better, to reach your goals. I want to play rugby and perform better. So I want to do more weights, more fitness. But there's a period where it has a negative effect. And what all our products try to do is increase that recovery time. So we're shortening the amount of time your body needs to recover as a result. So we're increasing blood flow, we're flushing out toxins, we're trying to increase the time. So shorten that period of time for recovery to enhance the amount of time you can spend actually performing and getting better. Mm.
It's one of those things, isn't it, where people, like we've alluded to, people are busy. Like, the only people who really have the time to recover properly are professionals. And that, you look at, like, in the pro cycling, I've got friends who race at the highest level, and they're like, they are like the king of sleep and queens of sleep. It's literally like, put them on a bus, they're on a bus going between A to B, gone, asleep. Mm-hmm. One of my best mates, I don't know someone who can sleep like him. I'm literally like, we'd get a train. I've obviously not been able to go and do so many things this year. But we rode across Australia together in 2019. And he literally would get to our, it's hard, like it is long days, 20 days of riding from the West Coast to the East Coast. Don't do it. and literally we'd get to where we were staying and gone. And I was just like, how do you do it? That's just because, you know, he used to be a pro. So he has that mentality of like, recover, as soon as you're done, rest. For me, my mentality is like, as soon as I am finished, get some form of protein in.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is smash my leg up with a with this. And that is like, you know, especially if you look at triathlon as well. Triathletes, you look at age group triathletes, they are generally more affluent, older. Quite often they are running a business or involved in a business at a very high level. To be able to do like age group triathlete work competitively, you need financial support to do that. It's bloody expensive. There's free sports there. To be able to do all three of them with all the equipment you need, that's a lot of money. And I've got quite a few friends who are age group triathletes and they're very open. I don't have the time. Literally don't have the time because I've got to swim, run, bike.
Exactly.
So any ways to make it easier and more convenient is definitely a good thing. I'm a huge believer in massages, but massages are time consuming. You think,
and have it,
and they're expensive. They really do add up in costs. Although I've got a good friend who is a massage, and she does have gets a lot of pleasure out of causing pain. Maybe slightly masochist person. She, you know, she's incredibly good at her job, but she says it herself, the problem that she finds is the time. People want it all quicker. And yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I think as a society, as you've already alluded to, we're shit at it. We're just terrible at it. As it's not the sexy thing necessarily to do a sport. People like seeing the pain and the suffering side of it. And, you know, actually very few people talk about the other side of it. I know from personal experience that at one point when I was, I guess, like kind of new to the sort of cycling that I do, I was just continually pushing myself as hard as I could. And I got very, very ill. I got shingles, which is, sounds like something out of Sesame Street, but in reality is one of the most, probably one of the most painful things I've ever had. For people that don't know about shingles, shingles is effectively damage to your nervous system, which is caused by like extreme fatigue effectively. And as we're talking about recovering, not recovering well, and you get like a rash that breaks out over one side of your body. So for me, it was my right side, and this rash just covers your body. And then it's like, feels like a little like pins and needles for a lot of the time, but then every now and then it's like if you were to touch an electric fence. That's what it was for me. It's varying severities of how painful it is for different people, but for me it was pretty extreme, and I think I wrote off 6 months basically because of it.
I mean, there is just this mentality, isn't there, that the more you do, the more gains you'll get. Like that, and that is across every sport. I know that's, you know, that's often people's default, but the harder you train, the more you need to rest. And that's just the bottom line. And actually people, we, part of our mission as a business is to change the narrative around recovery and rest, and to help people to understand that rest and recovery is power. It will improve your training, it will improve your performance, and you will get better as a result. So rather than seeing it, you know, as the kind of annoying add-on that you have to make time for, it's about viewing it as something that will help you to improve and will help you to leverage gains and be better. And, you know, you talked about us being a small business and obviously having a product, one product that's fairly democratized now, but in terms of our overall mission, you know, it is much bigger than just selling fantastic products like the MyoPro. It's really about how, you know, changing that narrative. And we talk about the three dimensions. So we talk about anyone who's got a fitness or performance goal. There's three elements to that. There's your training, your nutrition, and your recovery. And you really should be building all three of those elements into any kind of plan or training program that you're aiming to help you achieve your goals, basically. And that's really important for us. It's why, you know, we're developing a range of products, but also really passionate about the education piece. So why we, you know, are writing blogs, creating mobility content, and helping people to understand how they can recover efficiently and effectively and when they should be recovering.
Mm-hmm. So it's, I completely agree with you on the nutrition side as well. Having one of my closest friends is a nutritionist, and a tank of a man, literal tank. He had a fight with a lorry, and I think the lorry came off worse than he did. And you know, he has worked with pro cyclists, a lot of boxers, ironically. I don't know how come, and lots of professional football players. And he is like so on this thing about nutrition, and he's helped me out at points as well. Like, I used to be a big guy. I used to be 126 kilos at my biggest.
Wow. As a rugby player, that's big.
Like, I used to play rugby.
Play rugby at like 110, maybe. So just put that into context.
Yeah. When I played rugby in my teens at county level, and I was the smallest prop in the team.
I'm a hunter, so.
Well, I bet you're a lot taller than me, though.
Yeah, 6'2".
Yeah, I'm 5'11".
Yeah, okay, yeah.
For a prop, that's small.
Yeah, small. But 127 kegs or whatever, is that? You're making up. Yeah.
And I stopped playing because I got a quite bad injury. I dislocated my right knee the wrong way. Didn't know there was a wrong way, but there's a wrong way apparently. And it hasn't been right since. And I was advised to start cycling. I used to cycle as a kid. So I was like, yeah, cool. I like riding bikes. And it was also the way that I used to get, because I sort of stopped playing when I went to uni. And it was basically a bike was the easiest way to get to and from for uni. So my university degree, I went from being pretty fit when I was playing rugby. I was still big, but I was fit. And then doing an architecture degree where you spend a very, very long time sitting at a desk,
yeah,
and then going and working in that industry where it's very, very similar. You'll sit at a desk the whole time, but the expectations of working hours in architecture was like, I remember one company I worked for, my boss was like, we didn't get on. I won't name him. I won't name the company either. I don't want to cause any issue. Probably would as well if I did. He turned around to me one day and said to me, I expect you in the office before me every day, and I don't expect you to leave until I've gone home and got home, basically. And what that translated to was to be in the office at 7 o'clock in the morning and be expected to be there till gone 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
And that's just quite standard in the architectural industry. And so because of all these factors, I was never like an athletic kid, really. I just sort of stumbled into playing rugby at school and quite enjoyed it. But because of all these factors, it meant I very easily and quickly put on weight, you know, lack of sleep, terrible diet, sitting at a desk all day. Like, unfortunately, a lot of people are in that situation. Actually, the big thing was not seeing a lot of daylight. Sounds like a really, it's not a thing to think about, but, you know, working in an office, you're in artificial light all the time. And anyway, I started riding a bit more and realizing that I quite enjoyed it. And then weight started dropping off a bit anyway from cycling. And then my mate, who's a nutritionist, was just like, you need to like just refine your diet and enhance it because it's going to help you recover and you're going to feel better for it and be way more better on a bike effectively. And I'm vegetarian. And the thing that he really stressed to me is like the problem you have in a vegetarian diet is protein.
Protein, yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that has protein in as a vegetarian diet is also quite high in fat.
Yeah.
So he's like, you just need to be really conscious of that. And it made me very conscious about increasing protein levels in my diet. And say, my diet is probably almost vegan, minus I love yogurt and ice cream. That's like my two like things. And but there's ways around that still. You can get like low calorie ice creams at high in protein, and like 0% fat yogurt. That's like one of my favorite things, with just a bit of jam in it. I love it.
Yeah, great snack.
Yeah, and it's a really good way to then increase your protein level in your diet, which is as a lot of people know, it's quite hard if you're a vegetarian. It's equally if you're vegan, but there are ways to do it. And then because of that, I ended up like losing weight. And I think I got to a bit obsessed with it and got to a point where I was too light for my physique, where I got down to 83 kilos.
That's a lie.
Yes.
73 kilos.
That is a ridiculous transformation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I looked, in hindsight, I looked unhealthy. And this is where weight and cycling is very volatile as a relationship. Everyone thinks being lighter is equals being faster, and it doesn't necessarily. The proof in the pudding was when I was at like 73 kilos, my FTP dropped by about 40 watts. And that's a huge number.
Definitely.
Go back up to like 70, I'm probably sitting right now, 79, 80 kilos, I guess. Yeah. Drop back up to there, and my FTP is, you know, 50, 60 watts higher than it was than when I was at 73 kilos. And then you balance out.
Is that your optimum weight, do you think?
My optimum weight is probably 75. That's probably that fine line point, but I can't sustain it. It's not sustainable. And so that's probably the tipping point of where my power will drop considerably. Yeah. It's probably about 75 kilos. Anything under 75, I'd say, is the point where it drops. Yeah. But like day to day, being like high 70s, it's perfect. It means I can look at a chocolate bar and not put on weight.
Yeah.
Opposed to at 73 kilos, I'd look at a chocolate bar and instantly put on 2 kilos somehow. So there's such a fine line with it, with cycling, nutrition. And it's something that I, having dealt with that myself, am very conscious about how it's perceived to other people. And I mean, it's in, you know, with athletic, anything, and nutrition is such a contested topic. We've seen it in like long distance running and running in general recently. A lot of people coming out talking about their weight and issues like that. And also the thing that's really important is just to accept that body image in any sport, it's, you can look like anything. It doesn't really matter what you look like. There's definitely a prescribed thing, which because of media is what people think what was right. I think the perception is changing a lot though.
Couldn't agree more. In a rugby environment with all different shapes and sizes, some of the most fit people I've ever seen looked like a barrel with little twigs poked in, and they will outrun anyone. They'll have the skinniest arms, skinniest legs, a barrel got on them. They'll be a front rower, and they will be some of the fittest people you've ever seen in your life. And that's just their genetics. That's their body type. But they work exceptionally hard, decent enough nutrition, but they are unbelievably fit. And then you could have some people who look like a Greek god, cut off their tits, like shredded, and they're lifting no weight, they're not particularly strong, and they're not particularly fit, but they look fantastic. And as you said, it's aesthetically pleasing, but actually what we're all after is a performance-based thing, and you want to perform to high stability. And the media and things you've said and looking online, you do see that aesthetically pleasing image, and you think that is performance, but actually quite a lot of the time it isn't.
Yeah. And it's I think it's very noticeable in both the men's and women's side of sport. Why I think it's you talking about the rugby side of it is really interesting, because, you know, I do a lot of work with Movember, and men are notoriously shit at any of this kind of thing, as in mental health, being concerned about body image, talking about it. We're just terrible at it. We're useless. It's awful. And it's getting better. It is getting better, but I think that's a generational thing more than anything.
It's amazing though, when you look into the stats, I've done a lot of work with Movember as well over the last 10 years, and 75% of suicides are male, and out of 20 people on a rugby field, five of them at any given point have got mental health issues. And when you actually break it down to that number, it's unbelievable to think that actually diagnostics of mental health, it's not actually well known in men, because we don't talk about it. We don't go and see the doctor. We don't go and speak to people for help. And we're in a society where it's been built up that men don't do that. Men are tough. Men don't want to talk. And it's actually something we need to deal with. And Movember are great with that. And from 10 years ago, growing a moustache, and people are like, what are you doing there with that weird slug on your face? To now, people understand that, it's strong. It's strong as well. But now knowing in November that, you're doing Movember, and it's fully aware, people are fully aware now of what the charity is and what they're helping, which is a great progress.
Yeah, and I love how it all started, that it was a bunch of mates in Australia that were just like, we're going to do this, because it was never intended to be a charity. It was like, we're just going to do this because you don't see any good moustaches anymore. And I thought that was quite funny. Yeah. And then the founders were kind of like, actually, there's such a good angle here to be able to use it to, as they literally say, change the face of men's health.
Yeah.
And with the initial, I guess the initial effect of it was talking very much about men's physical health, prostate cancer, testicular cancer, that side of it. And then in recent years, switching more to try and focus and grow the people understanding the mental health side of it. And this is where sport is also fascinating, because it gives you there's so many positives to sport on your mental health. But you have to be very aware of the potential negatives. And when I say the potential negatives, I'm talking about like things of not paying attention to your body, overtraining, you're trying to starve yourself, those kind of things. That's where there's negative impacts of it. But the mental health impacts of it are very, very publicized and well known. We've seen it in the UK with the first wave of lockdown. And we're in like lockdown what now? I don't know, 500 it seems like. Yeah. But the first wave, it was a lot of discussions about, getting people out and exercising, going and riding your bike. And
definitely.
It's fantastic. I was reading a paper yesterday which was talking about the increase in cycling in the UK compared to the rest of the world during the first lockdown. And the UK is like it's just like yards ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
And on this, and the other bit, this is all data that's come from Strava. So it's, they've probably got the best access to data globally of any company. And they released all this information talking about it. And then you look at it on the flip side, they actually say that women coming into cycling is, I think it was like in the UK, it was like 80 something percent increase, which is insane.
That is insane.
Yeah. And that's across all age groups. But the biggest increase was like, I think it was like the 25 to 35 kind of age category.
Yeah.
But that, to see that people are going, actually, we can understand how exercise at a time when we're stuck and being working from home, whatever it is, going out and have that opportunity to go and ride your bike, go for a run, go for a jog, really does help people with their mental health right now.
Yeah.
I feel like this lockdown, a lot of people are going to find harder being
In the summer, you had your gardens, you had, as you say, exercising. Loads of my friends who haven't exercised properly for years got into their 5K runs, their 10K runs, their bike, getting times up on the group, seeing what their mates were doing, having little competitions. Now in winter, it's 0 degrees outside. I think it's going to be much harder. You've not got your garden to go and sit out in an evening to sort of feel like you're getting out. I think it will be a much tougher period.
Yeah, I agree. I think the other thing as well, though, is, it's back to your original point, is kind of helping people to understand from a mental health perspective and a physical health perspective, when's the right time to take rest and to recover. And, a lot of people will be coming into this for the first time and going hard at it, because that's what you do when you've got a new passion and you're excited about it. And you kind of go great guns. And I think it's difficult sometimes for people to know when is the right time to take a rest and when you should be taking recovery. But I think, it's important for people listening to kind of know that you should be listening to your body, and it will kind of tell you you know, when it needs to rest, if you're feeling fatigued, you know, as you said before you got shingles, you were feeling tired, but you probably didn't really listen to what your body was trying to tell you. You start to kind of feel tired, you get negative form, you're getting heavy legs. All of those things are signs that you should be listening to take a bit of a break and have, you know, a couple of days off, spend some time doing recovery, etc. And I think it's important message for people as they're kind of starting these sports, maybe for the first time, or getting back into them after a long time off. Because I think then you're even at kind of higher risk of getting injured and damaging yourself, basically.
Definitely. I think one of the key things, like you said there, is sometimes you need to have a rest and a rest day and have a Sunday off, for instance, or Wednesday, whatever you have, but also not just stopping for 4 days because your legs are sore, doing a recovery cycle, low level, active recovery, getting off, doing your stretch and using your MyoPro to increase blood flow to the stiff areas you've got to loosen the muscle, actually doing a bit of work to help regenerate the breakdown of your tissue to then be able to get back on your bike and do what you're enjoying. Because ultimately, you just continue to do it nonstop with no rest, your form will drop, you'll get ill, you'll get injured, things will happen. But if you work really hard and then have a 4 day rest period, you'll get really stiff, you've not moved them for a period. So then again, it's the other side of it. So you still need to do some active recovery, still need to look after your body.
Yeah, and on that point around mental health, actually, you know, the stats around the decrease in your mental health when you're somebody who's passionate about sport or takes a lot from that mentally and you can't do it, you know, it has a really negative impact on people mentally and how they're feeling, not being able to, you know, go out and do the thing that they're enjoying. So it's just, I think it's really important to spread that message about, you know, understanding when you should take a bit of a rest, even if you are deeply entrenched in your new hobby and you're really enjoying it, you set yourself goals.
Yeah, entrenched, good word. ties into basically a good segue. So when I did the trenching challenge at the end of November, November, that was hard. I took December off.
Yeah.
Off the bike. Because I was like, I normally do take December off pretty much completely. I mean, I'll go for a ride if I want to, but I don't really train. And I think it's really good to have a month where you do that. It's in cycling.
It's your birthday, isn't it?
It's my birthday. It's Christmas. It's New Year's. It's that. There's a lot of shit going on in December for me. And admittedly, all I want to do on my birthday is go for a bike ride. So I did that anyway. But, you know, for me, it's very consciously that December is a month where I don't really think about training so much. I just go if I feel like it. If I don't feel like going for a ride, I don't go for a ride. And with the trenching challenge, because that was, you know, that was the end of November, it was like, well, it makes complete sense. My training stress from the trenching challenge, just that challenge, was like 1,200 or something, which is bonkers if anyone that uses Training Peaks understands TSS training stress. Very few people do that across a week, maybe 2 weeks, let alone one ride. Yeah. And so I just kind of accepted that I needed to have, I was like, I need to have a month off and just relax and rest. But I did, I towards the end of it, my God, I was just like, I really want to go cycling again. Because you get to, I just stayed strict to myself saying like, I need to have this time off because it doesn't really matter in the scale of things. Like a month is 30 days, a year has 365 days in it. It's a tiny proportion of it. There's a bigger picture. You're alive for what? What's the average age now? I think like 85, 90, maybe?
Yeah.
You're alive for a lot of years. 30 days out of that amount of, you know, time really isn't a lot. And then
what's nice about that is that you said like towards the end of that month, you were gagging to get back on the bike.
Yeah.
Like you, by the end of November, probably finishing your trenching challenge, you're like, God, that was terrible. Like, whereas all of a sudden, the end of December, you're now ready to go. You're feeling great. You're pumped to get back into your training for the new year, which is exactly the
point. What would you say to someone who's listening to this and is thinking, like, I just don't know if I could allow myself to take a break that long, you know?
You need to have, I think the most important thing to understand is that as good as sport is, it shouldn't be your one thing in your life. You need to have other hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
I paint. I love painting. Yeah, I love painting. Which I will always have. I have like pad. I have on my desk right now, this desk is a mess. There's a reason why I never show it. So currently on my desk right now, I have three notebooks. One is my scruffy notebook, one is my good notebook, and one's my doodle book. My passport, something I've been painting, my phone, a drink, a pair of scissors, a tape measure. And an assortment of pens and paintbrushes and paints and a camera, I think. Yeah, and a camera. And this
I feel weird, like I just got an insight into your mind.
It's very artistic.
Oh, and this weird thing. This is a pump for a time trial disc wheel. I thought you can't get the end point in. Pipe. Yeah, it looks like a little pipe, doesn't it? I think it's really important to make sure that you don't, that whatever your sport is, to understand that it shouldn't be the thing that runs and controls your life. That is incredibly hard for people to admit.
Mm-hmm.
But allowing yourself to have a break, the biggest thing is to, there's this thing about people are always comparing themselves to other people.
Yeah.
Cycling's really bad for it. Everyone's like, oh, what's your FTP? What's your FTP? I hate it, because your FTP is something which is only actually relevant to you as a rider. It's not relevant to anyone else. And what I mean with that is, you know, my FTP is relevant to me because it's my legs, my weight, my height, my physique. There's no one that's the same as me. I don't have a twin. Even if you were a twin, you're not going to be, I mean, you have identical twins, but you're going to be feeling different on different days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's that side of it. The next side of it is, as I just sort of mentioned, everyone has good days and bad days. So someone who might have an FTP of, I don't know what, like, let's just pick a number, 400, might be having a terrible day on the bike compared to someone whose FTP is 200, and they might be having a banging day on a bike. And, you know, it doesn't really matter. It's something that's only relevant to you as a person. So being able to take away that concern and comparing yourself with other people, that for me anyway, was very uplifting and allowed me to sort of not really care about taking a month off.
Mm.
Yeah. It took the pressure away from me. It was hard to admit at first, but it's things like, you know, we've got so many amazing tools for, you know, documenting rides, fitness, whatever it is. You know, we've got Strava, Komoot, there's like new programs coming out all the time that allow you to do it. And, you know, and you see all your mates uploading stuff, you almost get like FOMO if you see someone's gone out for a big ride or whatever it is, or has done a good workout or et cetera, et cetera. You just need to think that's everyone's in their own little sphere and bubble that is relevant to them. It's not relevant to you.
Yeah.
Focusing on yourself and understanding that you are you as a person. Mm. And if you need the time off, you should take it. It's really, it's hard to get people to admit that though.
Definitely. And one thing I'd say about that is, like you said, you had your birthday in December and the one thing you wanted to do was have a ride. So you went on a ride, but it wasn't a training schedule of this amount of wattage, what you're doing over your period of training. It was because you felt like having a ride. Like in our off season with rugby, I'm exactly one of them people. I love training. I love the feeling. I love how it makes me mentally feel. And on my off season, I have a couple of weeks off and then I'll do totally different sports to what I normally do. Like I'll go and play tennis with Lottie, or we'll do a bodyweight circuit in the garden, or I'll go on a run, which I don't do long distance running because it's all short interval based stuff and totally different things to my usual. But it is really refreshing and really enjoyable. Getting out on a bike for a Sunday for a few hours is unbelievable. I never get to do that. I'm doing watt bike tests for 30 seconds as fast as you can, which is totally different. Horrific, by the way. 200 meter sprint with a guy stop watching you, try and get you under 10 seconds. Oh, it's horrendous. So, but yeah.
It'd be that. Have you broken a watt bike yet doing it?
I haven't, no. I've seen a couple of the big lads.
Even if you had.
You see, they're a great training tool, but I have seen people destroy them. I've not seen it with the newer models, the older models. I've seen people destroy them. Like my coach, who used to be a rower, he's huge as well, built like a tank. He used to have a watt bike, and he has the British land speed record, which is pretty cool. I set on like a recumbent bike they do the records in the Salt Lakes in Nevada, I think it is. And you basically just go as fast as you can for a certain distance, and it's fastest speed obviously wins. He holds the British record and he's broken it a couple of times. But when he was training for it, using a watt bike to do those really short intervals was really, really good for him. Got very strong, managed to break one.
See, I've seen it the other way around. I've seen watt bikes break a lot of people.
Yeah.
So over the side. I've seen a lot of horrendous. I've not seen a broken watt bike really, yeah.
Have you, I'm guessing you must have done like VO2 max testing and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, we've done some of that stuff. The new thing they're really enjoying in professional rugby is, like I said, the really short stuff. So like 6 seconds on a watt bike out of your seat, maximal wattage, average. So you can hit a peak, but if you drop off in that 6 seconds, then you get 24 seconds rest, then go again. And then they record your scores and it's like a 15 total. And after about 6, your legs are just drained. And you think 6 seconds sounds the easiest thing in the world. And it's like, they're writing it all down on a board and it's like a competition because you're seeing your other people in your position, other things. But it's funny because you said, obviously, your ideal weight is around that 75, 78 kg. In that sort of short interval stuff, our massive second rows who have levers weigh 118 kilograms, their watt power output is like insane. Like they absolutely smash that test. And then your smaller people don't, but then you flip it on its head and you do a 2K cycle test and all of a sudden them smaller ones win. So it's quite interesting.
I do. Yeah, that's one of the things I like about cycling is the difference in physique is so noticeable. And you look at, you know, there's sprinters, climbers, more sort of time trial focused people, more people who are more for long distance stuff. You look at like, there's a guy, a German guy, Robert Fosterman, who has got legs that are probably the size of me. Like, they're like this. And it's just nuts, the amount of power that comes out of those legs. And then in contrast, you know, the problem, sort of going back to it slightly, the problem with the weight and cycling is generally, who do we see winning, you know, big races like the Tour de France or the Giro Rosa, whatever it is, it's always... the overall winners generally is going to be someone who's very lightweight and thin, because to get over the mountains, that's where weight does come into it. And the problem with that is we see all these cyclists like, you know, Chris Froome, amazingly talented cyclist. He is effectively like, he looks so thin. He's incredibly tall and lanky. But that's actually just his physique as well. In contrast, though, you look at Bradley Wiggins now. I mean, he's someone who can change his physique so much and has done in his career. When he was racing on the track, he was a bigger guy because it was more about the power on the track. Goes and does the Tour de France and he looked gaunt. He looked noticeably gaunt. Look at him now. He's like running around with a big beard and a skinhead on him. It looks completely different. There's, you know, sport is encompassing to anyone, whatever your shape, physique, ability is, whatever it is, there's always something you can do. And it doesn't really, to be honest, it doesn't matter if you're good at it. It's as matter as if you enjoy it more than anything.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Totally. So I've got a question I wanted to ask you guys as well. And it's something that has kind of hit me quite a lot recently. It's on the subject of recovery as well. So we've seen obviously this terrible global situation we're in with COVID. And it is, I personally think it's quite scary. It's great that we've got vaccinations now. It's amazing to see. I think it's really good that, you know, the country's gone into lockdown to stop the spread. But obviously it is tricky for businesses. So anyway, I actually have two friends who have been diagnosed with COVID over the last week. Mm-hmm. Both of them use Whoop.
Yeah.
And both of them have very much alluded to the fact that Whoop has showed their heart rate variability rocketing up just before they were diagnosed. Mm. I've used Whoop before. I think it's fantastic. I think it's incredibly good. It's fucking expensive, but I love it as an idea. I wanted to kind of ask what your take on was that kind of side of it with technology and how, I guess, technology is helping aid recovery. Do you see it as a positive or a negative more than anything?
I see it as a huge positive. I think you've seen it develop over the years, heart rate monitors being worn for your sessions to see what level output you're doing, your stress on your training, so you can calculate everything. And Whoop's a really good tool. As you said, I think it's really expensive. They've done it cleverly with the subscription and carrying on rather than buying a product and keeping it. But it's interesting, like you said, people have had COVID, it shows that shoot up in your heart rate. Obviously a stress on the body. As soon as you get ill, there is a stress on the body. I think it's going to be the future long term. I don't think you can just hone in on purely that. You still have to do your own things, because technology is obviously really clever. It'll judge your sleep. It says how much you move, etc. But also a lot of it, we do loads of sleep testing within professional rugby. And a lot of the stuff is still how you personally feel. So sometimes the watch would say that I had the best night's sleep of my life, and I was in deep sleep for loads, and I had REM sleep and all this stuff. And then you wake up and I felt awful. Like, I felt a lot worse. Like I'd had a terrible night's sleep, filled it in. And then the scientists came over, sports scientists, were like, apparently you had the best night's sleep. But personally, I feel awful. Like I've had 3 coffees today. So I don't think it will ever take over the whole thing. I think it's great to help you understand how you're going, but a lot of it will come down to individuals and how you feel as well.
Yeah, and I think anything that helps us to understand ourselves and our bodies better, is it gives us power. But for me, there's a different, and that's the great bit about it, but I think there's a different side to it, which is, it's wonderful to have all of that data, but I think there are a lot of people out there are like, okay, well, what do I do now? Like, I know, I now understand that I have an issue with sleeping, or I'm not sleeping enough, for example. How do I improve that? How do I change that? And I think companies like Whoop have a responsibility to not only be giving people the data, but helping them to understand how to take that data and use that for improvement. Because, you know, I think there's a lack of education around that. What good is it unless you know then what to do to change and improve?
That's something that's definitely our long-term goal, is the education piece. So as Lottie said, you get all that data, you understand that you've had a really stressful day, you've done a lot of exercise, the output on your body's been huge. But then how do you transfer that into what should you be doing then? How should you be the next day? What would be great for you? What have you, your outputs been? What have you done? Which exercise is there for? Like you said, cycling, back pain, right? How can you recover from that to get the most efficient recovery program set up to then be able to go again and get the most maximal output? So that's something longer term we're definitely looking into, is the educational piece and being quite unique to individuals and what their outputs and what their exercises are, rather than an overall generic bad back. If you've been cycling and stuff from this, and it's probably because of your hip flex, do you know what I mean? We'll be able to actually work on an individual basis, which is something we think, as Lottie said, Whoop should be looking to do as well.
So, yeah, I guess the other thing is something you touched on earlier, actually, which is about comparison. And, you know, it's a huge issue in the current world that we live in, especially with social media and the ability to us all post our glossy lives and everything we're achieving. And actually, I think the other part of it, although it's brilliant because it brings people together around community and you can form communities based on the data and what everyone's doing, I think the other piece that, you know, brands have a responsibility to think about, and we as individuals, is about not kind of purveying this culture of comparison in a negative way and not allowing people to get too caught up in that, which I think sometimes the data can encourage.
Yeah, I agree. It's very clear that there's having access to all this data is incredible, but if you don't know what to do with it, it's pointless. It's fundamentally pointless. And so when I was using Whoop, as I say, I think it's a fantastic tool. The only reason I stopped using it was I was like, I don't really want to pay $30 a month or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly.
It adds up. And what I found was really useful with it was being able to understand like things that were causing me to not sleep well, because you can track your, you know, what you're eating, kind of like if you've had coffee late, like, whatever it is. And it was useful for that, to have that. Whoop do a very good podcast, but I don't think that it does almost feel quite, it's more of a podcast where they talk about to interesting people. They've like talked with like skaters, business people, whatever it is, who are using their products, obviously. But they should, to me, and I agree with you, it should be an opportunity to really help start to educate people. They have such a pool of data.
Yeah.
So much data where they can call out things. Like they've started, I've noticed the whole being able to understand COVID a bit more is fantastic. It's a really useful thing that they've started to sort of allude to. It's things like understanding like women's menstrual cycles as well. They've got the ability to talk about that because they have all this information and data on how that can affect your recovery, for example. And, you know, I'm sure they are working on it, but it's something that's not necessarily been I've not noticed it personally yet. I'm sure it's something that will come, I'm certain. Yeah. And but being able to do it on a more personal level, like you guys are want to do, is awesome. Like, everyone's individual at the end of the day. Everyone has their own strengths and weaknesses. And as you said as well, like, you might on paper or according to your watch or whatever, had a great night's sleep, but feel absolutely shit.
Mm. And yeah.
I completely know that feeling where it's like, I'm going to have 3 coffees before I do anything today.
or you flip it on its head and you feel absolutely great. Look at your watch and it says you're an awful night's sleep. And
then
I do that all the time. And I feel great, get up in the morning, check my watch on my way to training. I'm like, oh, apparently I was awful sleep. And then all of a sudden I feel a bit tired as a result of seeing the data. And I think I need a coffee all of a sudden. And I didn't need that before I saw the data.
Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting, like you said, about using it for the sleep, because all loads of my friends have used it. And that's exactly what they said, is that they realized having a glass of wine or a beer before bed and the impact that then had on their sleep. So it didn't necessarily change totally that they're not going to drink anymore, but if they had a tough training day coming, they had an awareness that they're not going to have a beer the night before or a glass of wine with their dinner. They'd leave that to get a good night's sleep. So I do think that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's a great product. And I'm sure in time it will become something that's way more accessible to people who can't justify those kind of costs. And there will be other things out there. Like, I mean, I have an Apple Watch, and the stuff on an Apple Watch is pretty damn good, to be fair. It's good enough for me. You know, I doesn't have to pay a monthly subscription for it. I bought it as a birthday present. So it's like
011 stamp of approval.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing I wanted to talk about with you guys was that I am really fascinated by, mainly because I think they look like something that an astronaut would wear, is your boots, the recovery trouser boot things.
Yeah, so they're...
How the fuck do these things work?
They're really cool. And something we've been speaking about quite a lot is obviously recovery and taking rest, etc., so your body can recover to help you get back to performing and achieving goals. What they actually do is they do what the body does naturally over a sort of 48-hour period, 3 days, but they reduce that time hugely into like a 20-minute, 30-minute cycle. So what your bodies do after you've trained is the blood has to then go to the muscles you've trained. They're trying to flush away the toxins that have been built up, trying to absorb the lactic acid, which causes DOMS, makes you feel stiff and sore. So what our MyoAirs and MyoPumps do, which are the astronaut trousers you've seen, is they use extreme air compression.
Mm.
And I'll give you an example. So recovery skins you wear to recover after a bike ride or to go to sleep in, or calf compression sleeves that you use after a run, they're at about 20 megahertz of pressure. So when they feel tight around your legs, ours go to 250 megahertz of pressure, and it feels like almost getting your blood pressure taken on your arm, where it blows up. But it works from your ankle, up your calf, up your knee, up your quad, to basically flush out all these toxins, help absorb the lactic acid, get fresh oxygenated blood, and then as it compresses really tight, it releases, and all of a sudden you feel your legs just fill back up with warm blood. Everyone says to us, like, oh, they're heated, I can feel my legs really warm. But it's basically the flushing process that your body will naturally do is enhanced by this extreme air compression. And it's incredible. There's loads of scientific studies out there now to show. There was one I read about a cycle group that basically they all did max output, max jump, max wattage the following day after their training for a 3-month program.
Mm-hmm.
Half of the study group used extreme air compression, half didn't. And their drop-off was minimized as a result. So the people who hadn't used it, their drop-off was quite big on their power output. The people who had a lot less power output, so therefore they could train quicker as a result, get more output in their sessions, do the recovery effectively again to then not drop off usually. And it's just, there's amazing studies out there now, but it's a really unique feeling. If you ever try them, they're really strange. It's like, pumping up, like getting your blood pressure taken all the way up your leg. And then the release is amazing. It's like, oh, and they just fill back up.
So when you're talking about the pressure, so that, what, did you say 20 times pressure and 200, was it?
Yeah, so it's 20 and ours go up to 250.
So that's what I would equate to a worm trying to get tight onto your hand and a very, very big superpowered snake.
Yeah,
that's one way of looking at it.
I mean, a few of the lads have called them the pythons. They're just like legs.
It's like they're one of those things as well that, like, I see them around, and I'm always just like, God, they look kind of cool, because it just looks like space boots. That's all they are to me, is space boots. But the idea of enhancing recovery into like a 20-minute slot like that is, and it forces people to stop. And that's a good
one. The easiest recovery you ever do. You literally, we strap them on the sofa, legs up, put the telly on, and they're working silently at the side, nothing going on. Legs are tingling and flushing away, lovely feeling. And then you're done. Literally go and get your dinner and crack on. It's honestly the most simple recovery you'll ever do.
It kind of comes back to that point of, you know, ultimately we're just trying to create products that mean that people stop dismissing recovery, because we make it so easy for them to do it and so simple for it to happen that you've got no excuse, basically. You know, if you can't do your recovery while you're sat on your laptop or you're sat on the sofa watching telly, you know, you've literally got no excuse. You can find time for that. So it's super simple.
The nice thing is as well is that all of our products, we have this unbelievable range of professional sports, professional athletes that we test all our products with, and we get feedback, we get scientific studies. Like, we understand, we don't bring anything to market that doesn't work. Like, we're not going to just sell you something as a gimmick to just try and make a quick buck. We're all about the educational piece. We're all about actually improving performance. And that's why we have an amazing pool of people that can actually test and give us lots of data on it.
And actually, there's some incredible studies on compression and the power of it. And it's so much so that the UCI has actually banned people wearing compression clothing during races, because it has that much impact on performance.
It's quite crazy to think, isn't it? But I mean, the UCI is known to have some very backwards opinions on certain things. I've got a mate that works for the UCI, so I don't know whether I should say that. And then, so what I wanted to ask is, like, what's next for you guys? What's the kind of plan this year? Really good noise. This normally has a really good noise when you pull it out. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Nice.
Very satisfying.
So, yeah, what's the kind of plan for the next year, for 2021?
Yeah. So, the plan for us is a couple of things. One is to continue working with professional teams. We're, you know, officially the recovery partners of Canyon, DHB, Cycle Team, and Squad. And we'll be doing a lot more of partnerships with professional teams, because it's so important to us that the products we create are, you know, good enough for elite level athletes before we bring them to market for other athletes. So it allows us to really test, as Joe said, with people at the top of their game. It's also for us about pushing this education piece. So a lot more content coming out, everything from mobility to all the stuff we've touched on today, diet, hydration, sleep, the different facets of recovery, and really helping to educate people on the power of it and how they can embed it into training programs in their life on a day-to-day basis. And then it's to continue innovation. We've got some really cool products in the pipeline that we're working on in the Myer Master Lab, and getting those to market to keep kind of, I guess, pushing recovery boundaries and helping people to improve it. Yeah. Have I missed anything?
No, I think you're spot on. And as we said early on in the conversation, it's just forever changing and evolving. So an idea we've got now, and speaking to people, like the initial massage gun I made, all of a sudden a year later, there's 100 of them available. So you want to get your ideas out there and help people as soon as possible. But we've got some really cool things coming soon. We've got some cool bits already. We've got occlusion, which is like blood restricted training, which actually cyclists have started coming on board with. So it basically tricks the muscle into thinking it's a much harder session than it is by restricting the blood flow. So you get your body adapts and pumps more protein, more growth hormone to their muscles to help develop them, but at a much lighter stress. So it's really, very, very interesting. Loads around that, especially with injury. People who have had injuries and can't load to the same ability as they could. We do it with a lot of people who have had knee injuries or surgeries, and therefore they can't load, so they have to do a much less load, but you're tricking the muscle to still build and progress, which is, that's the future. That's going to be mind-blowing in the years to come. But loads going on, and it's really exciting. As Lottie said, we've been a small business. We've had to grow, and something from day one we've said we want to do is educate and grow a community and help people. And with doing 1,000 different jobs, being a startup, you end up pushing that to the back, and we've tried to keep going with it. But with our new office and our nice little filming section, we'll have lots come in. So it's exciting.
Your new cold office. I think first thing is...
Before the content, we're going to sort out the heating.
I mean, it is Baltic in here.
And then how I like to finish every episode, I can't remember if I pre-warn you guys or not, and I don't often pre-warn people because I think it's funnier, is I always ask, and I do it because I've been told off for not doing it a few times, is I ask for 5 tips of anything, life tips, hacks, whatever you want. You're lucky that there's 2 of you, so you can kind of do 3 and 2, makes it a bit easier. And the reason why I do 5 is because 3 is actually quite easy. The 4th one normally involves some swearing at me and calling me a twat or something. That's quite standard. And then the 5th one is normally really, really fucking good. But in the past, it's been everything from recovery tips, cooking tips. There's been some quite rude ones involving strawberry lube.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow. I won't
go into that one. So it can be anything, but 5.
I'd just go off the ball, nothing to do with recovery, sleep, anything like that. But something I've always lived by, which is a tip that I got given when I was young, was like, have no regrets. So in terms of whatever your goal might be, like, don't ever look back and go, oh, what if? Mm. What if I'd have got up at 5 a.m. to do that cycle pre the race a month ago? What if I'd have taken time to recover? What if I'd have not had them 2 takeaways a week for the last month? Whatever it might be, what if? I've always tried to live my life with having no regrets. So if I'm going for something and I've set myself a goal, I'm going for it, and I'm not going to live wondering what if I'd have done something. So that would definitely be my number one that I personally lived a lot of my life by, and it's been really helpful for me throughout my life. But that's number one.
I'm going to do it now. Take it back to recover it. But
the brain's the business, you see.
No, mine is listen to your body. Like, do not overpush yourself. Really listen to what your body's telling you. If you're feeling tired, if your legs are sore, if you feel like your form's slipping, just know yourself and take a minute to think about how you're really feeling. And I guarantee you'll perform better, feel better as a result.
Number 3, do what you love. Like,
God, I mean, what are you, a motivational speaker?
Yeah, motivational speaker. Aim for the stars, land on the clouds, you know.
Oh, Christ.
No, just do what you love. As you said, like, you don't necessarily have to be good at it. Like, the fact is, with sport, if you enjoy it and you love it, you're going to do it. Like, it doesn't matter if you're not going to beat all your mates on Strava. It doesn't matter if you're going to be the best and beat all your mates on Strava. If you enjoy doing it, get out there and do it, because ultimately, we spoke about mental health on this podcast as well. Like, it's going to help you in the long term. It's going to be really useful to get out there, do something you love, be passionate about something, because there's too many people in the world that go to work, finish work, and just have a mundane life that continues on a cycle. Get up, do something you love, and enjoy it.
Okay, I'm going all TED Talk vibes along with you. Mine is, and I've been practicing this deliberately.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
I bet you don't. Is deliberately is gratitude.
Oh, that's exactly what I knew you were going to say.
Did you? No, because I have actually been really trying, because you know, you can go through life, especially at the moment, and it's just like everything's a bit of a slog. And I found over the last kind of, since COVID really, I've been trying to just find a couple of things in my day that I'm just grateful for. And what we're working really long hours at the moment in our freezing cold office. It's not glam, you know, there's nowhere to go, nothing to look forward to. But just being, you know, sat at the desk going, oh my God, you know what? I got to do this really cool podcast today. I got to chat with Chris. We had a wicked time. Like, it was really nice. And what a privilege to be able to do that. And I think if you change your mindset about things, someone said to me that about training, they were like, you can either view it as a chore that you've got to tick off your list, or you can go, oh my God, my body's good enough to take me out there and go train today. And how cool is that going to be? So I think gratitude's a cool one. Try and do something recovery related now.
I'm going to be recovery later. I'd already thought of it, but quite COVID related is that just in the last year, we've not been able to get out and see people. So to make time for who you care about, like, I've done the most Zoom calls I've ever done and spoke to friends I haven't spoke to in years, because I haven't physically had to go to Cambridge to go and see them for a weekend and book it into a busy schedule. Yeah. I've actually booked an hour on Zoom on an evening with a coffee and had a chat, and it's actually been great. Like, I've spoke to loads of my friends that I've lost touch with, but still really close friends, but we've just not had time to catch up. And I think a tip is just like make time for people. You don't always have to go out and see them. You can do a Zoom now with the modern day we live in. You can actually spend time, and that goes a long way to mental health as well, of how many people out there aren't speaking to people at this current time. So make time to go and speak to them.
Were they the most wanky five you've ever heard?
Yeah, probably.
No. honestly, no. I did run. They were good. They were really good five. The most wanky five award goes to a guy called John Woodruff, who is a good friend of mine who lives in Amsterdam, but is American as well. So has a really great accent.
Yeah.
And I met him, a funny way how I met him. I met John cycling across Kyrgyzstan.
Oh, cool.
Not the sort of place you'd imagine to meet someone.
No.
So I met John cycling across Kyrgyzstan, and coincidentally, the next time I saw him was cycling across Morocco.
What, just randomly?
We were doing a race, so we kind of knew each other.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that is the most random two meetings ever.
And I got chatting to him, but we did a podcast quite a while ago, and John is like a very in tune with himself person. He's just very like, yeah, man, just do this. Really chilled, just really relaxed, really zen. And he has the award of the five most wanky tips, hands down.
You make it an annual award.
Yeah, you should have.
I might get like a little freaking...
21.
Yeah,
woo! You got it for 21. Definitely. But yeah, that was... Yeah, John definitely has it as the 2021, hands down. But... I think that's just because he's such a zen person. Very chilled out guy, but awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having us. Really enjoyed it.
I would say, Lottie, I don't understand why Jer isn't giving you his jumper.
Quite.
She's got like four coats. She's got three heaters around her.
Got a lot of
heaters. There's a reason I've not got my coat on.
But yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for... this, first of all, in my hands,
and I'm glad you're enjoying it.
It's been hyper useful. My only problem that I have with it is I forget to charge it, but I forget to charge everything. That's just me as a person. It has definitely been a downfall for quite a few things. my own laptop,
bike. Yeah, the laptop's about to cut out, isn't it? Nice.
Actually made sure I plugged the charger in this time. So the laptop isn't going to cut out. But yeah, thank you so much for everything and all the best for this year.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been really nice to chat.